360's The Week That Was, the most listened to hour in Territory Radio. The Territory leaders break down this week's big issues.
Now, it is Friday morning. It is time for The Week That Was, now proudly brought to you by De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers. And joining us in the studio this morning, bit of a different lineup considering it was International Women's Day earlier this week. It's an all blokes affair aside from myself. We have, of course, got the ALP Minister for Small Business, Paul Kirby. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie. Good morning, everyone.
Great to have you in the studio. We've got the Deputy Opposition Leader, Gerard Maley. Good morning.
Good morning, Katie. Good morning, listeners.
And we've got our very own Maddie Hepworth. Good morning.
Morning, Katie. Morning, all.
Great to have you all in the studio. And I tell you what, it has been a busy week, but didn't get much busier or crazier, I think you'd have to say. Probably confusing's the right word for the day that we had on air yesterday. Because, first off, we thought that Darwin wasn't going to be eligible for these half-price flights. Then we had the Minister for Federal Tourism, Dan Tehan, on the show. Take a listen to what he told us yesterday. The Ayersrock and Alice Springs are included on that list. Our understanding is that Darwin isn't at this stage. Is that correct?
No, Darwin is one of the locations that we've also identified. And so it will be a beneficiary as well. So the Northern Territory is very well covered by this package.
Darwin wasn't on that list that has come through to us, but by the sounds of it, what you're saying is that people will be able to travel to Darwin.
There is. And if you go onto the Department of Transport website, you will see that that Darwin is listed. So it says where the TANS program, which is the travel assistance program, will reduce the cost of flying to the following initial regions: Adelaide, Broome, Darwin, Great Ocean Road, Hobart, etc. So it's there on the Department of Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Communications website. What we gave initially was a list of the destinations as examples,
yep.
But quite clearly... Darwin is part of them, so you've done well in the NT.
Well, unfortunately, it wasn't clear yesterday morning. It actually wasn't on that list. So after we did that interview with Dan T, and we were all on quite the high, you'd have to say, including the tourism sector, then we received a message from the Prime Minister's office saying, no, the Minister was speaking about another program. There was absolute deflation, I think you'd have to say, from our tourism operators upon hearing that message from the PM's office. But then, lo and behold, after midday, those ministers, federally, got out of their cabinet meeting, and we had the Senator Sam McMahon join us on the show after 12 o'clock to tell us that she had spoken with the Deputy Prime Minister, Michael McCormack, and had it confirmed that Darwin would indeed be on that list. I tell you what, I was a bit gun-shy by that point, and I said I'd like to see it in writing before I believed anything. But we got there in the end, and do you know what? It's the right thing for the Northern Territory. This is going to be fantastic, I hope, for our tourism operators. We're talking about people being able to fly to Darwin and be able to come and see what we all think is one of the greatest places in the world.
Yeah, it's going to be great for the Territory. I mean, this is not just Darwin, Alice Springs and Ayersrock. It's going to be right across the Territory because people will fly in here. It'll be out in the rural area, into Kakadu, into Litchfield, right throughout the Territory. It's going to be a major boost for the Territorians, and I really hope that lots of people in the southern states come up. We've had a great wet season. It's really green. It's beautiful out there at the moment. There's lots of things to see. So I think this is going to be really good for the Territory.
Yeah, certainly. It's going to be fantastic. We know that people aren't going to be able to travel overseas. People are starting to get immunised. We understand that. But there's still going to be a lot of people wanting to holiday internally. When it starts to get that bit colder down south, we know people will look up here. And, it's fantastic that they'll be able to access these cheaper flights. And we look forward to welcoming them here.
Yeah, I guess the biggest thing at the moment is that we've got to make sure that we're really marketing ourselves now to the rest of Australia as well. We're on this list, but we've got to be able to sort of differentiate ourselves, I would think, to some of those other major locations, particularly if we're talking about competing with the likes of the Gold Coast, Cairns, Broome, you know, to try and win that tourism dollar. And it is so very important for those operators.
Mm. Glenn Henley said yesterday from the schmozzle that was the announcement, as he said, just that 3 hours in between the announcement and then the follow-up that Darwin would actually have the flights, that could have been 3 hours in which people were looking at those 13 other destinations, I think they were, and planning their next holiday to those locations. So it did put us on the back foot a little. Around that whole bungle, the question still remains as to what actually happened to begin with. Was Darwin always left off the list?
I don't.
Because, I mean, you'd know with an announcement like this, in fact, we'd all know in the room that a lot of planning and preparation goes into this. And the at the end of the day, it was an initial list of 13 different places. And that is what everyone except the tourism minister said.
I'm certainly of the understanding that we were not on that original list.
Yeah, so, certainly a bit of smoke and mirrors at the moment. Sorry, Joe. But yeah, they're saying now that list is a bit of a guide and it might be added to into the future. So I think they're covering some tracks along the way. But certainly was Alison Uluru that we heard initially, and then this has come on the back of that. It's been
great.
It
was good on Senator Sam McMahon to go in there, heard a bit of confusion, go and sort it out straight away because it needed to be nipped in the butt. And like Maddie said, the longer that went on, the more people in interstate would have gone somewhere else and looked somewhere else. So Sam's gone, done a job, supported the territory, and now we're on the list. And let's hope these people come.
That, you know, they would have had serious egg on their faces, though, had she not done that. Because honestly, after hearing Minister Tehan on the show, and he's somebody who I respect, you know, he's a minister who I think does a great job. But I know by about 11:30 yesterday, I was asking whether he knew where Darwin was. You know, when we were considering that we may not actually be on that list. And I was thinking to myself, goodness gracious, how do you end up in a situation where you're sort of confusing this situation? But you know what? I'll always give credit where it's due, and we've landed exactly where we should have, and that is with Darwin on the list. But I think the next step now is trying to work out, if we do see an influx of tourists, are we going to have the workforce and the capability to make sure that we can deal with it? I hope so. I hope we've got those hotel rooms, and I hope that we've got everything that we sort of need to make sure we have a really bustling season.
Yeah, certainly. Even late last year, we went down to Alison Tennant to speak with businesses down there. Certainly, our tourism businesses were some of the hardest hit through 2020. They were being, you know, upbeat and confident about this year would be a much better year. But business in general down there were worried about getting the workforce. So, yeah, we're doing a lot of work at the moment trying to encourage school leavers to stay at home and get into some of those jobs that they perhaps wouldn't traditionally look at. We know that overseas workers might not be an issue, but there's an option. There's a range of work we're doing for the ag industry to try and help out there. But yeah, certainly workforce through the territory is something that we'll keep a sharp focus on.
And I think it's really up to the Gunner Labor government to go and lift the game and make sure that the people come up here, because not only for the tourism, but we're also looking at 400-odd people into Howard Springs, which is another issue. So we're going to have a whole range of people come to the territory. And remember, these people, the tourists who come up here, they need to have a good experience, because this might be their first time up here. If they have a bad experience and go back down and tell their friends, don't bother going to the territory, it's no good.
Well,
that would be very bad.
And I reckon
we need to make sure that we get the right people and they come up here and they get a job. Because what happens? Lots of people come to the territory, get a job and stay here.
Yeah, that's right. If you can get them here, sometimes it's a good thing. You know,
that's the way to get us out of this massive debt that the Labor government got us into, $8.4 billion. We need to grow the economy and grow the population. This here is a classic example. We are lucky. The door's open. We need to make sure these people come and make sure they stay here.
One of the things that, you know, that it would be remiss of me not to mention, and I spoke to Daniel Rochford about this yesterday from Tourism Central Australia, is that, you know, obviously this is a fantastic initiative, but we have to make sure that when we do have tourists here in the territory, whether you're talking about the Top End or Alice Springs or Uluru, they've got to feel safe. They've got to feel as though their personal safety isn't at risk. I know we've had some really serious issues in Alice Springs when you talk about crime. He did say that things seem to be a little bit better over the last couple of weeks, with thanks to some really serious work being done, obviously, by the police and other agencies. But this is something that we've got to get right. You know, even up here in the Top End, we're seeing a lot of that public drunkenness at the moment. And I think if we really want to make sure that people come and visit the Top End or Central Australia, they've got to enjoy that experience. They certainly, you know, you do not want them seeing people having a brawl down Nucky Street.
Well, it's a battle of two worlds for us as broadcasters. I mean, you know, we look at both those issues every day, and it's hard because an announcement like we saw yesterday, we really do obviously want to pump up the territory and talk about all the great things you can do in Central Australia. And if you get one of these half-price flights to Darwin and you turn on your radio coming out of the airport, you want to hear about all the good things of Darwin. But equally for us as broadcasters, and you see it as politicians as well, is there are plenty of negative things in our community right now as well. So like you said, it's about to eliminate, some of those.
Certainly a challenging time at the moment. There's a lot of extra money around the community at time, and we understand. We put a lot of hard work into making sure that whether it's extra lighting through the city, activation, extra Larrakia patrols, extra private security, activation and events on, that people do feel safe as they're moving around. But just at the moment, there is a lot of expendable cash in the community through those double payments, and we certainly encourage people to do the right thing and make sure as police come off of the borders, they'll have a much better capacity to get around a lot of those hotspots
I've got a message here from one of our listeners that says, "Hi, Katie. I was walking down Smith Street Mall after finishing work at 4 p.m. yesterday. Five young men walked towards me as they pulled bandanas up over their faces. They diverted their attention away from me and walked into the OPSM store. I'm 30 weeks pregnant with my third child and left seriously wondering if this is where I want to bring up a family when my safety feels compromised at 4 p.m. on a Thursday afternoon." Again, I think the thing that we've got to be really careful of here is that if we've got Territorians who are feeling a bit that way, imagine how you'd feel if you're a tourist coming here and thinking, this is not what I'm used to seeing.
Crime is definitely an issue, and the stats over the last year show they've gone up for alcohol and DV related right across the Territory, up, not just a little bit, 28, 38, 50% in some places. And the Labor government can't say this is going to be a surprise. We all knew that there's going to be an increased local tourism this year, and what Labor have done hasn't worked. So it's no point just doing the same thing again. They need to fix it, because you're dead right, Katie. If people come up here and have a bad experience, and crime and public drunkenness and antisocial behaviour is a bad experience, and people will not come back, and we need to make sure they come here because we need their money, because we need to grow the population. Crime's such an issue, and we're talking right across the Territory. If you talk about the things in Alice Springs, I was speaking to Josh Borgoyne during the week, and he said that Monday night there was a really big brawl and there was all sorts of dramas in Alice Springs, and he said it just hasn't got any better. So the government really need to fix the problem in really quickly, because we know now we're going to get more people come here with from their money April. In their pockets to spend it, and if they don't like it, they don't feel safe, it's going to be a massive deflation of what we could have.
It's
got to
be a good experience. Yes. There's no doubt about that.
It's certainly something that we don't rest on. It's certainly something we've done a lot of work on, like I said, right from reinstating the Larrakia Rangers, making sure those extra 100 police officers get through their training, and we'll continue to do that. Any crime, whether it's people feeling unsafe in the community or whether it's people at home or in their businesses, there are elements of those crime stats that have gone down. We know that business break-ins through the CBD have gone down. So, stats will tell you a lot of things, but when you get out and speak to people, that's where the truth of it is. We know that some people are concerned at the moment, but we'll continue to work on. We know that we've got legislation around ringleader, around property crimes. It's the sort of thing that you never put the queue in
just
the rack and say that we've done enough. You're always working on it.
Just while we're on that topic, and I was going to talk about this a little bit later, but I might bring it up now because it's topical. We actually caught up with a long-term Territorian, Garth, earlier in the week. Now, he's actually been with TIO, Allianz Insurance, I believe, since 1998. Now, he lives in Palmerston. He's been broken into in his home, we're talking about, twice within a six-month period. Now, his insurance then refused to renew his home insurance policy unless he had some serious upgrades when it comes to security on his home. He then tried to approach, different insurers to see whether maybe there was somebody else or maybe there was another insurance agency that might be a better fit. One of them had actually said, we can't actually insure your area because it's high risk.
Wow.
And you sort of go to yourself, wowee, we're talking about Palmerston here. You're talking about a suburb where, Palmerston, I mean, goodness gracious, what's the population? 44,000 or something along those lines. It's a big population. But what I think that this really points out is, Curbs, you've just said, obviously, it doesn't, we're talking about stats. Some of those have gone down, some of them have gone up. But what matters is how people are feeling. Now, when I talk about this story, the thing that seriously concerns me about this is we might hear that stats have gone down, but if you're in a situation where you live somewhere and you can't get insurance on your home, you just go, what is going on?
Crime is out of control right across the Territory, and we're talking about Palmerston, Katherine, Tennant Creek, Alice Springs, all those places. It's just, you don't feel safe to walk down the street. And I've said this in Parliament, I can't believe that all across the Territory, people coming into the CLP offices, electoral offices, say crime's out of control, but yet Labor don't seem to talk about it. We had a matter of public importance last time in Parliament. Only one person spoke about it. So I find it hard to believe that people aren't going into the Labor offices saying crime's an issue, where they seem not to worry about it, where the CLP brought in some issue, we want to try and fix this. A gunner said crime's not an issue, bail's not an issue. People need to feel safe, and not just Territorians, but these people come in, we go back to those tourism. If they don't feel safe, they're not going to come back, they're not going to bring their friends. But again, the local people, now that's a classic example of not having insurance. So the crimes right across the Territory is affecting people living here every day.
That, I don't think that's the case. I don't think that the Chief Minister has ever said that crime's not an issue. What we're saying is that it's something that we're continually working on, that we have put those extra police on, we have put extra Larrakia Rangers on in the CBD, there are extra security patrols as well. It's not something that you rest on. There's legislation that we're looking at bringing in as well. I travel up and down the Territory as well. I don't feel unsafe walking through Katherine in the middle of the day. As far as matters of public importance and what gets debated in Parliament, there's a range of really important stuff that we need to talk about in Parliament, so we're not going to spend all day every day talking about crime.
But
we'll get out and talk
something
to businesses.
That the government didn't actually agree to, because it is something, I would say that it is the number one issue for a lot of Territorians. Like, to me, I do think that it was something that should have been discussed.
I agree, absolutely. People come into my office all the time. You look on the socials, on all these community groups, it's all about crime. We've had people losing their insurance. You know, that person's probably going to consider whether they stay, because how can you stay in Palmerston with a house with no insurance?
One thing I do want to raise is that on a positive, it does look as though the Watch House has reopened. The Darwin City Watch House reopened yesterday morning is what's being reported today. I believe in the NT News it was closed 9 months ago. It follows those calls from hospitality and also the police association to have it reopened. So that Watch House, which is located in Nucky Street, in the police station there in the Mitchell Centre, it's going to be back in operation 24/7. This is certainly a good thing. I think that, when we'd reached a point when it wasn't opened when it wasn't opened, initially we sort of all understood it because there was those COVID, there was certainly COVID demands. But now that those demands are lifting, I think it was a no-brainer that it needed to reopen. So I'm glad to see that it has.
Yeah, certainly as a local member, that's something that I've regularly spoken to police about. It had been open during business hours for a period of time. But yeah, certainly as those police come back from the borders, we thank them for all of their hard work. They've spent a lot of time away from their families in a pretty thankless task, but yeah, now they can get back into some of that forward-facing duties. We really look forward to that.
You are, of course, listening to Mix 104.9's 360. It is the week that was, now brought to you by De Silva Hebron, and also broadcasting in Alice Springs on 8HA.
360's the week that was. Thanks to De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers.
Joining us this morning for the week that was, we've got Jared Maley, Paul Kirby and Matt Hepworth. I was about to call you Matt Cunningham then. It took me a moment.
Can I say, I don't know if it's been fixed, but last Friday when the week that was audio went up online, it said Sky News as Matt Hepworth. I don't know if it's been fixed or not.
well, poor old Ronnie is juggling a lot out there. There's no doubt about it.
Look, producing that's a good man. I was happy to take that title.
Yeah. Hey, I know that there's we're covering off on plenty this morning. We certainly covered a lot off in that first talk break, talking tourism to begin with, but then talking about some of the issues that we've got around crime. I know we've had a few messages coming through around that issue of crime, and we always do. It's something that people are pretty fired up about, particularly if they're not feeling safe. Jared, I think someone had just messaged you something about Katherine, hadn't they?
Yeah, Katie. Minister Kirby mentioned that he feels comfortable walking down Katherine. I just received a text message from a girl in Katherine I know, and I read it out. That guy's incorrect. I'm a Katherine girl, and I hate walking down the street of Katherine. I feel utterly uncomfortable, and if I can, I prefer to drive instead of walking. And we all know that Katherine's not a very big town, so this young lady drives around because she doesn't feel safe. That's just a classic example. And imagine if a tourism, especially the drive tourism, when they drive up, there's only one main street in Katherine, they're going to see the same as a local girl.
I mean, at the end of the day, we all deserve to feel safe wherever we are, and I'm sure that, particularly, for whether you're male or female, but particularly for women, I think, you want to make sure you're feeling safe when you walk down the street. Street.
Yeah, I think the Pallies do a great job down there. There's clearly a lot less people around town. I feel very comfortable walking through, Catherine. I love going down there.
Let's talk about Howard Springs, because I tell you what, this was a major announcement that was made last Friday afternoon, that the Howard Springs quarantine facility is set for a massive increase in repatriated Aussies returning home. The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, made the initial announcement late on Friday, saying that the facility would expand to accept 2,000 people a fortnight, up from 850. But many this week have been questioning exactly what it's all going to mean for the Northern Territory. The facility is going to be overseen by the Police Commissioner, Jamie Chalker. And the team credited with the success of that facility on the international arrival side, the National Critical Care and Trauma Response Centre, is going to be transitioned out with the Department of Health to take over. They've got to find an additional 400 staff to man that facility as well. Firstly, I think that there was a lot of people pretty concerned, I've got to say, to hear that that the AusMat team is going to be moving out of that facility. You know, we know that we've had, I believe the correct number is 67 cases of COVID go through the Howard Springs International side. Some of those have been the highly infectious strain of the UK virus. But that AusMat team has done a phenomenal job in terms of making sure that that has not spread into the community in any way, shape or form. Now, we know that that AusMat team is so brilliant that they're actually teaching people in other locations around the world how to manage their facilities. Now, Len Notaras, Professor Len Notaras, joined us on the show throughout the week and was at pains to say that they will make sure, you know, that that the staff that take over are obviously trained sufficiently and that they will do what they can to make sure that that transition is easy. But really, you know, even following on from that discussion, I do not understand why the AusMat team is being moved out here. From my perspective, they should have been kept in there. They should be running the show. They are health professionals at the absolute top of their game.
Yeah, Kate, look, Howard Springs is right in the middle of my electorate, so it really concerns me of what's going to happen there, because COVID's not there right now, I understand, but everyone knows it's going to happen. If they're going to have 2,000 arrivals a fortnight, it's going to be really the only place in the Northern Territory where there's active COVID-19. Mm. And with all these new variants, we're highly contagious, if it gets out into the community, it's going to have a disastrous effect right across the Territory. And we've just been speaking about tourism. If we get an outbreak, you can kiss that goodbye. And that's a lot of money coming to the Northern Territory. So this is a really, really timely matter that needs to be discussed. We know that the Territory health professionals and the police do a great job at the front line, and
yeah,
I respect
absolutely.
That. They do the best they can. But what I'm saying is the lack of leadership from the top coming down, because we know that there's been rave parties, we know there's been an attempted breakout, we know there's been some people in wheelie bins going around, and that's in the Territory side. My understanding is they're going to combine and all have one massive area. So now, instead of having two separate areas...
I forgot about that TikTok video.
Yeah, so, you know... So,
Curbs didn't. His scoff suggested otherwise.
And that's only what we know about. So who really knows what goes on there? But, you know, so ultimately, on a more serious note, COVID-19 is going to be there. It's going to be odd 2,000 people. And I accept
that's
that these
right.
people are going to be trained, but they're going to have to train them quickly. They're not going to be health professionals who do this for a living. And it's really concerning me.
But also, we actually had the union on, and they were worried about how we're even going to find the staff. You know, we're talking about having to actually compete with other states and territories when it comes to those staff. When we spoke to the union throughout the week, he basically said, Billy, I believe his name was, from the health union, he had essentially said that, you know, we're going to need to be offering more money to actually lure people to the Northern Territory to be able to make sure we've got the staff that are required to take over. I did hear then yesterday the ABC was reporting that we are going to have the support of some ADF staff. To what volume or how many, I don't know. Curbs, do you have any light on that?
Oh, I haven't got any of those specific figures. I know that you've had the health minister on through the week and you've had intricate discussions with her on air about exactly how this is going to play out. It's not the first time that we've heard Jared say, well, the sky's falling as far as this facility is concerned. He didn't want to use it at the start. Now, 12 months ago, this has proven to be a gold star, a first-class facility. These people are training people in overseas jurisdictions about how to most properly handle this COVID outbreak. So to suggest that Len Notaras to suggest that our health professionals that have very slowly and clinically stepped their way through these processes over the last 12 months are going to not make the best decisions in the best interest of Territorians and expats that are stuck overseas. We've got to remember
Len didn't say that, though. Len had said that obviously they're going to be stepping them through. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure what point you were trying to make then. Did you say he didn't say that?
No, I'm saying that the clinical experts have been at the front of this decision-making right the way through.
Yep.
We've done that right from the start. It hasn't been ministers dictating to the chief health officer what has to happen.
I would hope not, because you guys aren't health professionals, like, with the utmost respect, but you're actually not. They are. They're at the top of their game. You know, so we need to be taking that advice from them. But I guess that's why then there was some in the community asking throughout the week as well. You know, we understand the way that the emergency management works in the Northern Territory, that it is obviously arching over the top is the police commissioner. But many were questioning that throughout the week and saying, well, hang on a second, this isn't actually a police issue. It's a health pandemic.
Well, that's the same process that's in place for when we have cyclones.
Now, different to a cyclone.
I understand that, but say for power restoration, he's still the territory controller when we have a cyclone. Doesn't mean that he dictates to people how the power goes back on, and the same in this situation. That's his title, that's his role. The health professionals have led every step of this recovery for the Northern Territory, and they'll continue to do that. This training will happen in a methodical, very well laid out way, and as I was about to say, we've got thousands of expats that are stuck overseas that can't get home, and this is one of the best ways of being able to get people back.
No one's disputing that, but I think what everybody is wondering at this point in time is if we've got 400 staff coming in now, we are seriously increasing those numbers, and then we're not having that team, which is largely being credited with the success of that facility, moving out, transitioning out. I reckon that's where people are feeling a little bit nervous. And it's not me feeling nervous, it's the community feeling nervous.
Because you can look what happened down south. The outbreaks that happened in Melbourne and through Sydney have all been through not the actual health staff, but the cleaners, the security, those the contractors that come in. They're the people who are going to have the extra 400 people. It's going to be more cleaners, more security. They're the people who's a chance is going to be an outbreak. That's what's happened before. So I really hope that the Gunner government have learned from previous history that's where the problem is, not the health. Now, they've done a great job. It's these part-time contractors that come in. Then I think there's a case down south where someone was an Uber driver.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where the
one
problem's going to be.
One other thing I do want to just touch on is, where are they going to live? You know, look, I am seriously, I'm wondering, where exactly are we going to sort of house these 400 people? I mean, I hope that we've got enough sort of space on the rental market. I hope that there's some temporary accommodation, or is there capacity for some of them to stay out at Howard Springs? Like, has there been much thought into that at this point in time?
The
numbers that I think Quentin Keeling gave you from REINT the other day, just before doing the interview, he had a quick look on realestate.com, and there was, I think he said, around 180, 190 rental vacancies in Palmerston at the moment. Obviously, there'd be more throughout Darwin and the northern suburbs, but I think that is a good question. I thoroughly enjoyed actually listening to Len Notaras explain the situation to you. And I think initially I had that same kind of reaction as everyone: if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But, you know, when I was listening to Len, it did sound like, you know, he was someone who has been at the front line through all of this. And he said all the steps and the training of which the current staff, the AUSMAT staff, have done, the next lot of staff will receive that training as well. So it is going to be different personnel, and there would be risk. But listening to Len, my mind was a little bit more confident.
Yeah.
Certainly, those systems and processes will be the same. And Katie, I know from the current crop of people that are out there working, they haven't all moved from interstate. Sometimes they're local people that have taken the opportunity to make a career choice
and make
a career change.
But if we lose 400 people from our current health system to go and work out at Howard Springs, how are we going to run the hospitals?
Well, I've had people get in touch with me that have got family that are training up, looking at coming into nursing, that want to get into that because they'll know they'll get some fantastic experience. There are people that are in other industries that are looking for a change, so they won't all have to come from interstate.
You don't reckon we'll have any issues at all in terms of staffing it?
I know that we'll step through that as best we possibly can. That, as we're saying, we've got the utmost confidence in Len Notaris and that those systems and processes are already built in. They're working well, and it'll be a matter of explaining that to people as they come on board.
Has there been much discussion from the Cabinet or from the government in terms of accommodating those staff as well if we do have people moving from interstate? Because ideally, you know, it would be a good thing if we have people moving from interstate and they come here, they relocate here. You know, and don't leave would be the ideal situation if there was ongoing employment opportunities for them. But has there been much thought into that accommodation side of things for those staff?
Yeah, I know that the Health Minister is across all aspects of this, and I know you've had a lot of conversations with her about it. I couldn't tell you whether they have planned of if they need to set an area aside of Howard Springs for any type of accommodation arrangements, but at the moment we know that the majority of people that work out there are just housed in the general community.
All right, we're going to take a very short break. Time is fast getting away from us this morning. It's a busy one.
360's The Week That Was, thanks to the Silver Hebron, your local lawyers.
And you are listening to The Week That Was. Joining us in the studio this morning, Paul Kirby, Jared Maley and Maddie Hepworth. And I tell you what, it's been a busy week, this one, and we found out earlier in the week that government backbencher Mark Turner is going to hold on to his Territory Labor Party membership and remain part of the government despite disappointing conduct the party's leadership team has ruled. Now, we know that the Chief Minister, Michael Gunner, last month said that he asked the party to review Mr. Turner's membership in light of what he said was dishonesty from the MLA about the extent of an extramarital affair. It came after Labor's parliamentary team expelled Mr. Turner from the caucus as the opposition heaped pressure on the government over the scandal, which also saw the resignation of a senior Labor staffer. Now, in that statement, it obviously said that the member for Blaine's conduct has been disappointing, but based on his actions, he'll be warned that behaviour like this in the future will not be tolerated, noting serious sanctions already imposed by the parliamentary wing. Should further information come to light about the member for Blaine's conduct, the administrative committee of the party may consider further action which could result in expulsion. Now, I've got to say, the fact that we've even got to warn MLAs that behaviour like this won't be tolerated is quite unbelievable to me. Like, I sort of think when you enter politics, you should know that you're going to be held on a... You know, you're going to be held to a higher standard than what regular members of the community are. Whether that's right or wrong, it's the truth. And you know, whether you believe that this is a moral issue and one for he and his family, or whether you believe that it is one which the whole community needs to be aware of, I actually reckon the really disappointing part about this is that, you know, we'd heard from the Chief Minister that that he and the caucus would not accept that dishonesty, yet the people of Blaine have to accept that dishonesty.
Yeah, okay, I think there's two issues here. One is about the mistrust that the member of Blaine got with his constituents and going to schools, to the shop. You know, that's going to have to be a big issue for him to deal with. And then talking about the moral with his family, just, you know, trying to go to a school assembly and speak to school assemblies, you know, that's going to have to be an issue for him. And the people of Blaine deserve someone who's going to be able to go to all community events and represent all the community. That's the first issue. And I think the second issue, which is more probably just as important, is the lack of leadership by the Gunner government. It really has to cast doubt on Michael Gunner's leadership here. Clearly, he put out their request that he be leave the party and wrote some recommendations. The party's ignored that. I think the Young Labour called him spineless or looking for a vertebrae in some correspondence along the line. So, you know, it really shows that there's a real problem with Michael Gunner's leadership.
I've obviously got three good blokes in the studio. Maddie Hepworth, is this behaviour that you think's acceptable?
No.
Jared Maley? Paul Kirby?
Absolutely not. We came in 2016 and had to do a power of work to try and improve politicians' standing in the community after what had happened from 2012 to 2016. And I've been a part of business delegations that have gone over to Japan, and business people over there are still reeling from the way the then CLP chief minister was treated while he was overseas. So, in 2016, the group of MLAs that got elected looked each other in the eye and said that we were going to do better. So we were extremely disappointed when this event happened, and understanding that Mr. Turner's got a lot of work to do in his electorate and a lot of work to do with his family. I mean, the parliamentary wing made a decision, at the time that we didn't believe that we were being told the truth. And to be honest, as text messages have come out in the media, it's probably confirmed what our worst thoughts. As for the leadership,
there was text messages in there that I certainly wouldn't accept from a friend.
Well, I haven't read them, to be honest with you, Katie. I've got no interest in that. I know that we set a bar that that bar wasn't met. That our parliamentary wing took the action that we needed to take to make sure that when we have discussions within that group of people, that we can that we're strong and united together, and we can guarantee that those conversations are staying within that caucus.
So, perhaps if it's not good enough for the parliamentary wing or the caucus, why is it good enough for the party and for the people of Blaine? That's what I'm trying to wrap my head around.
So, the administrative wing of the party has a constitution that it works by, and that they certainly will make decisions upon that. We certainly felt internally as a caucus that we had to make a strong decision so that, and that's the decisions that we control. I don't sit on the administrative team. They have a constitution that they need to work within to make sure that people are afforded natural justice.
Do you reckon, though, I mean, I'm sure you'll probably toe the party line here, but do you reckon, given the fact that, you know, you've got Young Labor at one point saying that the Chief Minister needed to find his vertebrae, you then had the Chief Minister saying that it's behaviour that he does not find acceptable and wanted the party to consider that expulsion, the party's then come back and not actually done that. Does it demonstrate that there is a real divide within the party at the moment on this issue?
No, absolutely not. I think if, you know, into the future, the people from the party and from Young Labor will get to understand exactly what was discussed during that week or fortnight of sittings, the opportunities that the member for Blaine was given to come clean and to, you know, it's a horrible set of circumstances for his family, and I really do feel for them. He had the opportunity to draw a line in the sand, to be honest with everybody, and move forward from that. And that level of deceit with the Chief Minister and with caucus was something that we couldn't move past. The Chief Minister was put in a position to face Parliament with what he believed that the member for Blaine was telling him, and through those text messages coming out, it's proved that that hasn't been the honest truth. So we need to make a stand there.
Now, with that privileges committee, and you know, like in terms of that being investigated, how does that process work? Are you on it, Jared, or have I misunderstood that?
I'm on the committee, but the committee is a confidential committee, so
okay,
we can't talk about it. Basically, it'll review it, and then it'll come back with a report to Parliament, and when it's available. So we can't really talk about how
that's
it's going to work.
No, that's all right.
I know that they've met, but and that's going through a process. But you know, ultimately, you know, this talks about Michael Gunner's leadership here, where these text messages come out, and remember the text messages talk about, I'll check, I'm talking to someone else. So, you know, how truthful was all this? You know, there's a cover-up there, for sure, and information says that. And there's no talk about that, and that's just gone under the cover. And really, we need to look at that, because this goes back to the heart of Michael Gunner's leadership in relation to the whole issue. Because, you know, the Labor Party have got 13 or 14 seats. If the Labor Party were going to throw out Turner, that brings it back to 13. So is the Labor Party putting themselves and their interests above the community?
Well, do you know, that's the question that we've been getting asked, I guess, by the community throughout the week. And, you know, we have people that message us that are from the electorate of Blaine, people that call that Ronnie's spoken to, that are from that electorate, that are feeling quite disappointed. And I think they're feeling quite disappointed because they voted for somebody and it sort of turned out that that person has maybe not been what they thought he was going to be. And I can understand that disappointment. You know, I can understand that the community's feeling disappointed about this at this point in time. And, you know, I do want to go back to, because, Kerbs, I know that you said, you know, there was a lot of time spent trying to sort of regain that trust, particularly in the business community, following on from some of what happened under the former government. And, you know, under the former government, the Chief Minister really, you know, he wasn't at the time. He was obviously the opposition leader at the time. But when there was the situation with the then member for Blaine, you know, he was baying for blood, wanting, you know, saying that he needed to step down and saying that he needed to resign. And I just don't understand, you know, why now that the shoe is on the other foot, why it's sort of being treated so differently.
Well, I think it's a numbers game, Katie. They need the numbers to hold government. We're only 6 months into a 4-year term. So if he was into an independent, and one more issue, they'll lose government mid-term, and that's what the Labor Party don't want. Look, and I really believe that the Labor Party are putting their interests ahead of the community.
I want to be careful also and not break caucus confidentiality, but I think my caucus colleagues would be comfortable with me saying, we had that discussion. We had the discussion around numbers and around what action we need to take as a caucus. And as a group, we said, particularly the long-standing members, like, we have done too much hard work to try and repair people's belief in elected members to allow this type of behaviour to go on unsanctioned. So as a caucus, we took the strongest action that we possibly could. The party makes their decisions under the rules that they're bound by, and I think the Chief Minister has confirmed that those rules will be reviewed going forward.
Do you think, given the parliamentary wing and the administrative side are at odds here, do you think the administrative wing made the wrong decision?
Nah, I think they've made the decision that they've got under the constitution that they're bound by. I think we'll have a conference later in the year, and if you want to change things like this, it takes a two-thirds majority to change some of those decisions. That'll be a full and frank conversation
so
that we have
hell,
at the time.
What do you need to do under that constitution to actually get given the sack?
Do you think there'll be change in the constitution then, given what we've seen?
Well, there may well be, but as I said, we as a group in 2016 set some high standards for ourselves because we knew that behaviour had to change. As one of the members that has spent 4 or 5 years, it's not just me, my family gets scrutinised, we all get scrutinised every time we step outside, and I'm happy to have that scrutiny. I'm happy for somebody to look at every minute of every day because I'm just head down, bum up, doing the best that I can for the people of Port Darwin. When people bring that into disrepute, then that is extremely disappointing, and obviously the member for Blaine's got an opportunity now to try and recoup people's faith.
Yeah, well, and I think he's going to have to. You know, look, we'd love to have him on the show to ask a few questions and to give him the opportunity to actually speak to the people in his community as well. We're going to take a very short break. There's still a bit to cover off and we've only got about 8 minutes left. 8941 1049 is the number if you'd like to call through. If you want to send us a text, as many, many people are this morning, 0418 957 367.
360 is the week that was. Thanks to De Silva Hebron, your local lawyers.
It is, of course, the week that was. And in the studio with us this morning, Paul Kirby, Jared Maley and Maddie Hepworth. And before we wrap up this morning, I do want to talk quickly about this report, an independent audit which was commissioned by the Northern Territory Electoral Commission. It follows on from the last election, the 2020 election, and it's uncovered instances where MLAs were unclear about what was allowed when it comes to how they use their electoral allowances. It does look as though there was also, someone's just messaged through and said, hi Katie, the Northern Territory Electoral Commission report also regarding political donations. Apparently there was an $88,000 donation since Jan 1 that the CLP didn't produce receipts for. Look, it always makes for interesting reading. Jared, do you know anything about that one?
Well, I don't know a little bit about it, but I understand that the all information has been put back into the Electoral Commission. And what it was, there wasn't one donation. It was anything under $1,500 doesn't have to be disclosed.
Right.
And I think what the CLP did, they just didn't put that $1,500 into the return. Well, I understand that they have to just put the figure in, which is about $88,000, but you don't have to disclose where the donations come from. And I'm only, don't quote me on that. But I think that's what it is.
Well, you're quoted, mate. You're on the radio.
You're on air. Yeah.
But I do know that the
$80,000 slush fund.
It's been all updated and the new returns being put in with the Electoral Commission. Because ultimately, if we talk about this, if you want me to talk about it, I'm a newbie here.
So
I'm really keen to make sure that I know what needs to be done with my electoral allowance, because, you know, it's a grey area, and I'd be happy to have as much training as possible, because one thing I don't want to do is breach any electoral allowance, because ultimately this must have happened through one of the Labor or one of the Independents before, because other than Leah, we're all newbies in the CLP.
Yeah.
So there must have been a blurring with the previous government, which needs to be sorted out, because I know that the CLP, we don't want to do it, and we have to do as much training as we possibly can.
Heavy, you were reading that report yesterday, weren't you?
Yeah. I think the most interesting part about it, I think where there was discrepancies, and there was a couple with third-party donors as well in parties where, it was just a discrepancy, I think, between the initial documents provided and the end, but they have since been cleared up. But what I found was interesting reading is that there is a lot of sitting MLAs were struggling to find the difference between your electoral spend spending and election spending. And a great example would be, say, if during the election campaign, Curbs, I'm in your electorate, you know, if you put on a free barbecue in the park on a Saturday afternoon, is that election spending or is that electoral spending? And so the Electoral Commission's just recommended that people go back and check exactly what's, you know, involved in that.
Especially and during a campaign.
It's a very blurred line. Yeah.
I did actually get accused by one of the other candidates that giving out water on a Saturday morning might be electioneering. But as you know, Katie, it's something that I do every week. But look, Gerard's right.
He tries to throw the football at me sometimes while I'm doing park run. I think, brass, I can hardly breathe.
You're not going to win my vote with that.
It is really important. It's something that we put a lot of time and effort into making sure we got schooled up by the Legislative Assembly when we first came in. There was also the opportunity for us to liaise really closely with some sitting members that had been in for quite some time. And as we talked about in the break, all of these spendings needs to be documented, needs to be receipted, it needs to go to your account and then get signed off by the ATO as well. So I'm happy that there's a really strong level of scrutiny around it, but probably good for us to explain that better to the public in the future.
Well, we are going to have to wrap up for this morning. It has been an incredibly busy hour. We've got a lot of text messages to read out after you guys chuff off. I'll make sure I read those out after 10 o'clock. Paul Kirby, the Minister for Small Business, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks a lot, Katie. Cheers.
We've also got the Deputy Opposition Leader, Gerard Maley. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Katie. I understand you got on the top 10 of the most powerful women's list, so congratulations.
Been about that. Shame job.
I'm sure
Tash. Don't take myself too seriously.
I'm sure Tash is not. She's not ashamed.
No. She's number one, old Filesy, hey? And Leah, number two. It's a great list. The NT News has done a very good job with that, I've got to say, and written some really nice words about some wonderful Territory women. So shout out to them. You are listening to Mix 104.9's 360.